Good morning. Happy Easter. He is risen. He is risen indeed. I am betting my life on it. It is a curious thing to sing, and I wonder how you felt about it, and I'll give you a chance just to process what we've been singing, that you would want to know God more, that you would surrender. Surrendering has bad baggage in their culture, doesn't it? It's sort of like, oh, I'm going to give over to you? No, thanks. I prefer to be in control. But if we were to tell ourselves, I can give you control, and you're expert at what you're doing. So if I was on a tour through the mountains and I had a guide, that would be better, would it not? So maybe you're here this morning because it's Easter and it's that time of year and it's good to be at church. Or a friend invited you and it's good to be here because you enjoy them and maybe this is worth exploring. I'm going to encourage you to take that invitation seriously. There is a God who we would believe as a church family has made us uniquely, wonderfully, intelligently, purposefully, willfully, with freedom to choose him or to reject him, to shape our lives around him, or to go our own way, to not surrender. Now, let me ask you a question. You won't need to give much thought. I'll answer it for myself. When I have chosen to go my way, that's not worked out super well. I'll give you a quick story before I show you a video. I happened to be, by the gracious gift of a friend in Maui this past week, and we were on the beach, or at least in the pool area overlooking the beach. And there is a way of the world, and there's a way of Jesus Christ. There's a way of living life abundantly, and there's a way of living it sort of miserly and cynically and judgmentally. Arrogantly, I might even say. So we had just assembled all of our chairs on the pool deck, and we were sitting there and looking out at the ocean. And someone, while we were down at the beach, had the gall to come and move their chairs in our area. I know. I did phone the authorities. Do you know what happened? We get it all the time, sir. So there's a sign right before you go to the pool deck. There's no such thing as reserving space or chairs for any time. But we're funny the way we work, right? In the world, we have this, from a worldly point of view, which is, I'm entitled to this because I paid to get here. Even though it says don't reserve, I'm going to reserve them anyway. And if anyone challenges that, I'm going to be pretty ticked. Which is really odd, isn't it? But that is the way. I've noticed that's the way that some people function, including my friends who had this very thought. I can't believe that they did that. And when I see them, I'm going to let them know, and this is not going to be good for their soul. So I'm a pastor. I love Jesus. I didn't like where this was going. I actually think Jesus' way of making our enemies our friends is actually much better. So we all had it reassembled on our deck chairs, and they were there. And even worse, they were actually facing us. We were looking this way. They were looking right at us. And there was like maybe this much distance between my feet and the feet of the next person. God is so funny. So I said, okay, to myself, I'm just going to go over and say hello. So I went in. I had to go around them to get in between them, and I said, hey, where are you from? So it turns out they're from the States, and he was a car salesman, so I said, where are you from? And around an hour later, I had made a friend, and my friends who had brought us there said, ooh, I can't believe you did that. Did what? I knew you'd do that because you're such a pastor. Did what? You made a friend out of our enemy, didn't you? I said, yes, I did. Now, you know Rick and Barb, and you'll see them next year when you come here, and you'll have a friend now instead of an enemy. Isn't that better? Isn't that a better way to live? We have a better way to live because of the one who lives now but died for us then. To put all of the Easter Sunday morning in context, a friend of mine, Doug Epp, who's back now from California, and we'll talk about how your trip went maybe next Sunday, sent along a couple of videos that help us package it visually. So I'm going to ask Rick if he'd show us that video for this morning. And thanks, Ernie, for grabbing those lights. It'll probably be easier for us to see if we at least get this bank off. I don't know why the cross is the central image of Christianity. I know why. Because of what we saw. But I like to think it should be either the tombstone rolled away, some linens that were dirtied, something that is more about Easter morning than it is about Good Friday, but we don't have Easter morning without Good Friday, so. It was a Sunday morning, the morning after the Jewish Sabbath on the Saturday. There was a violent earthquake. An angel of the Lord had come down from heaven, rolled back the stone that sealed the tomb of Christ, and then he sat on it, did that angel. While Roman guards looked on, afraid, shaken, like men who were dead, is how the Bible describes them. And wouldn't you be? What just happened there? Two women, Mary Magdalene and the mother of James, who was also Mary, who, by the way, is Jesus' mom, had gone to the tomb that morning, and there they met that angel on that rock having a Starbucks just waiting. The angel said to the women, "Don't be afraid. I know who you're looking for. Jesus, he's not here. He's risen, just as he said he would. Come here. Let me show you the place where he lay. See for yourself, then go and tell his disciples, he has risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. That's where you'll find him. That's where you'll see him." And so they did. They hurried away from the tomb, but only got so far before they ran into him, into Jesus. They fell to the ground. They clasped his feet and they worshiped him. No doubt smiling, Jesus, their Lord, our Lord, then told them to do what the angel had said. So off they went to tell Jesus' disciples all of this. But the disciples didn't believe those two Marys. Seriously, he's risen? Like not dead. You saw him? Is this some kind of April Fool's thing? Because we're not buying it. Peter, however, got up and he ran to the tomb, maybe believing, but no doubt hoping that it was true, that his Lord had risen. When he got to the tomb, he bent over, he saw the strips of linen lying by themselves. No body, nowhere. He went away, and the scripture says, wondering what happened. He told you, did he not? But we dare to not believe sometimes. He wondered what happened. Wouldn't we? It was a whirlwind of 3 years of doing life with Jesus for these disciples, eating with him, traveling with him, sleeping with him, learning from him, becoming like him, living life like Christ, the way of Jesus. Then it all came to a puzzling and rather grisly end, as we saw pictured there, and then it didn't. Then he breathed. I love the way that video ends. That's the hope. But unlike the Marys, we didn't see that. We saw the video of someone playing that part. And we don't see him. And yet we choose to believe in him, Jesus, to believe that he has risen. And I can't think of a better Easter sort of message to share than to talk about why we believe this and why it's so important to us. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Why? What confidence can we have that Jesus Christ was crucified, died, was buried, and then rose from the dead? Let's consider a few things here. First, and maybe most importantly, because you don't have a resurrection without a death, he did die. This seems like a logical place to start because a resurrection isn't even possible where there isn't a death. But I raise it not to point out the obvious, but to counter-argue an argument against the resurrection of Jesus Christ, namely that he didn't die. Some have argued that Jesus faked his death, or that maybe someone slipped him something and he just passed out, and he woke up later, or that he swooned and recovered. But this seems super unlikely because of what we do know about the Romans. They just knew how to kill people, and they knew how to kill them dead. Just think about what they did to Jesus. They flogged him, which alone could have killed him, his back bare to a three-pronged whip, digging into and pulling out his flesh. Thrashed up to 40 times as Jewish law would have allowed, because he said he was God. Then the soldiers clothed him in a purple robe because he said he was king. He gave him a staff and placed a skin-splitting crown of thorns on his head to mock him as king, because kings wore a thorn or a crown. They spat on him and punched him in the face. And taking the staff away that he had given, they used it to repeatedly smash him in the head. He was brought before the Jews that way, bloodied, bruised, beaten, barely conscious, when they yelled collectively at the urging of the religious leaders of his day, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" Then Pilate handed him over to be crucified. But Jesus would have to get to the place of his crucifixion, Golgotha, the place of the skull, carrying his cross. That walk up Calvary Hill was called the Via Dolorosa, which is to say the way of suffering. The distance between the place of Pontius Pilate and Golgotha was roughly 650 yards, mostly uphill. And the beam Jesus carried would have been between 80 and 100 pounds. So that would be like one of us carrying a load of 100 pounds on our back over the length of 6.5 football fields going uphill all the way. Mind you, Jesus had been severely beaten, and he'd lost all kinds of blood and fluids and was very likely concussed. I suspect that it was only because of the forced help of Simon of Cyrene that Jesus made it to the hill at all. Then he was crucified. No food, no water, barely able to breathe. The soldiers then came to break the legs of the crucified men beside him on either side of him to expedite their death. But when they came to Jesus, they noticed that he had already died and confirmed his death by piercing his side. The Romans knew how to kill people. They had a ton of experience doing so, enough that it's safe to say that when they pronounced Jesus dead, they knew what they were talking about. Secondly, a tomb was empty. Jesus did die, and he was buried, but his burial place that Sunday morning was empty. The easiest way to disprove the resurrection of Jesus would have been to have produced what? His body. But no one could. And we know that it wasn't misplaced or stolen because it was sealed shut by the state and guarded by soldiers. And if that wasn't enough, the Bible adds this interesting little tidbit, which you can read for yourself in Matthew chapter 28, verses 11 through 15. While the women were on their way, some of the guards went into the city and reported to the chief priests everything that had happened. When the chief priests had met with the elders and devised a plan, they gave the soldiers a large sum of money and told them to say this: "You are to say, 'His disciples came during the night and stole him away while we were asleep.' If this report gets to the governor, we will satisfy him and keep you out of trouble." So the soldiers took the money and did as they were instructed, and this story has been widely circulated amongst the Jews to this very day. That smells like a cover-up to me. I don't know. A little bribe for a little lie, so the religious leaders could be saved of face, because they were the ones who illegally tried Jesus for blasphemy. He said he was God, and then demanded his crucifixion, only to be proven wrong, of course, by his resurrection. Something, by the way, only God could do. A little bribe for a little lie, so the guards could avoid embarrassment for sleeping on the job, if that was the accusation, or being executed because they were completely derelict in their duties as soldiers. So where did Jesus go? Peter wondered the same thing, actually. Third point, lots of people, including Peter, saw Jesus alive after he died. Jesus appeared to Peter and then the 11 disciples. After that, more than 500 followers saw Jesus at the same time. Then he appeared to his brother, James, and then again to all of his disciples. He also walked with two others on the road to Emmaus. And then lastly, he appeared to Paul, who wrote all kinds of letters in the Bible, in the New Testament. That's over 500 witnesses. And they saw Jesus at different times and at different locations. How do you explain that? But the most compelling reason of all for me to believe that Jesus Christ did indeed rise from the dead was the changed lives of the disciples. And I'd say that it's the most compelling consideration for this reason. It doesn't require belief in the Bible itself. All that we've said so far is taken from the Bible, but not this. The changed lives of the disciples is simply a matter of historical record. Like Jesus, whose life and crucifixion are matters of historical record. He lived and died to Jesus, and about 100 days later, his disciples, the men and women who had been following him, rather than being scattered and completely disappointed and disillusioned by his death, instead testified openly about his resurrection. They became confident and empowered and willing to die themselves, rather than deny what they had witnessed. Why would they risk their lives for a lie? And how could they have kept that lie going when so many people in the emperor's or the Roman Empire would have known? Those first century Christians were the forerunners of billions of believers ever since. From 600 million worldwide believers recorded in 1910 by the Pew Research Center to 2.18 billion by 2011. That's a third of the world's population. And a projected 2.9 billion believers by 2050. It's extraordinary. They were just not willing to not talk about what they had seen, and it changed them from fearful and cowering to world beaters. So let's recap here. What might give us some confidence that Jesus Christ did actually rise from the dead? Well, that he actually died. He didn't fake his death. He didn't swoon and recover. He died because the Romans were very good at killing. Two, the tomb was empty. Three, more than 500 people saw him walking around on the planet a bunch of days after he'd been killed. And then fourthly, that his disciples became the world beaters that they became. Here's the question. Easter Sunday morning, why is this so important? Why is the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead such a big deal? Why is it the center of Christian faith? If I had to reduce it to one word, it is simply this: hope. Hope. The resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead represents the hope that death can be defeated. There isn't anything that we fear more than death. There just isn't anything. I know public speaking ranks up there, but that's nothing compared to the other. But what if death isn't the end? What if death is the beginning of a new kind of life? You see, Christians choose to follow Jesus Christ and to believe that he is risen because he is all about life. He invites us to live this life as abundantly and purposefully and joyfully as possible, and to continue to do the same through life ever after by following him in this life right on into the next life. His resurrection makes his invitation credible. He says, Jesus speaking, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, even though he dies, and whoever lives and believes in me will never die. He said this, by the way, just before he raised Lazarus from the dead. Jesus Christ has the power over life and death. This is because he is the creator of all things. We're told this in Paul's letter to the Colossians. And because he is life itself. Jesus describes himself in John 14:6 as the way, the truth, and the life. It stands to reason then that he who creates and is life can restore life even after we might die. The Bible plainly says that whoever believes in Jesus Christ has a spiritual life that death cannot conquer or diminish in any way. This is why the resurrection is so important. It's living proof of life after death. Jesus was the first to do it, and those who believe in him will be second and third and fourth and so on. They will follow. The Apostle Paul put it this way. If there's no resurrection of the dead, then not even Christ has been raised. And if Christ has not been raised, our preaching, the apostles' preaching, is useless. And so is our faith, the faith of the believers in Corinth to whom Paul was writing that note. More than that, he goes on, we are then found to be false witnesses. So if he hasn't risen, we are also liars about God. For we have testified about God that he raised Christ from the dead. But Christ has indeed been risen from the dead, the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep. Fallen asleep being a euphemism for death, of course. Jesus was the first. Then Paul goes on to explain how this relates to Adam. For since death came through a man, Adam, the resurrection of the dead comes also through a man, Christ. For as in Adam all die, so in Christ all will be made alive. But each in his own turn, Christ, the first fruits, so the first, then when he comes, those who belong to him. That is those who have placed their faith, their trust, their belief in him, that he is risen, that he is Lord, that he is worthy of us surrendering our lives to, because his way is better. Jesus put it this way, because I live, you also will live. In the Greek Orthodox tradition, the day after Easter was devoted to telling jokes. They felt that telling, so you can laugh, Steve, it's a good deal. They felt that telling jokes was a way to imitate the cosmic joke that God pulled on Satan in the resurrection. Satan thought he'd won, and he was smug in the victory, smiling to himself, having the last word. So he thought. Then God raised Jesus from the dead. Life and salvation became the last words. We might say, on this day particularly, April Fools, Satan. Let me pray. If there is anyone here this morning who has been wondering about this story, the Easter story, its beautiful conclusion, and you want to talk to somebody about that, there are all kinds of people you can talk to about that this morning. But I would welcome you to come forward if you want some prayer or to talk to someone about where you're at in your own journey of faith. And I'll invite my brothers and sisters who might see more people up here than I can manage to come forward and just to offer their prayers and maybe help out. But happy Easter. It is such a good day. Without the chocolate even. It's a great day with the chocolate, but it's a super great day without the chocolate. Let me pray.